Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, moving a little bit into our, we adopted a second of an off-season schedule. We'll pick up the frequency of pods as we approach traditional signing day here, but we're going to try to aim for a weekly pod here and bring as strong a collection of content as possible, and look forward to what we have here on our humble little show outline. I want to start, as always, by thanking the good people at Louisiana Hot Sauce, three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, and a partner that we look forward to working with for a long time. So, great product, perfect for us, perfect for the two of us as we legitimately enjoy it, and want to thank our fans and listeners for the support that they have continued to give that brand, both in actual purchases and on social media.
That's right, man. Louisiana Hot Sauce is an awesome product. Three simple ingredients, one great product with almost lethal simplicity, if you will, but not lethal in that it'll kill you. It'll just, you know, it knocks it out. It's awesome.
No lethalness. Just wonderful simplicity. We'll go with that. So Bud made reference to it there. I don't want to say the most important thing, but certainly the people that place the most value on is recruiting this time of year. We've got a lot of different kids on the board, a lot of kids out-of-state prospects. We can talk about that a little bit as well and what that means and if this is a trend, et cetera, et cetera. But why don't we just go ahead and run down a list of kids that we both pulled out that are very much kind of the final targets for the 2018 class.
Yeah, so the first is we have a new commitment we have to talk about, and that's Cameron McDonald, Long Beach Poly tight end. He was committed to USC for a while. I don't know if USC dropped him or if he just reopened his recruitment or whatever. He looks like a pretty good player. Now, I don't know if he's, you know, a superstar yet. If I've seen him in person, I don't recall it. And that's not a knock on him. I'm just saying he looks pretty good. As far as how he fits in the offense, to me, he's more of a move tight end, right? He's not a huge frame guy. He's a player you can take and move off the line. You can use him in multiple different spots. Can be an H-back type if you need it. And look, they needed the tight end in this class because you lost both Maven Saunders and Ryan Izzo in the same year. Izzo declared for the pros. We talked about that on the last episode. And Saunders transferred to out of Kansas. So looks like they got their guy there in Cam McDonald. I think everybody should be pretty excited about that. You got to fill out this class and, you know, the number one tight end in California. We'll talk in a little bit about how many California kids FSU's in on, whether that's a long-term trend, et cetera. But it looks like a pretty good get for them.
We'll go from California and always a great high school to be involved with there, Long Beach Poly, to a place a little closer to campus, Valdosta, offensive tackle, Jalen Goss.
Yeah, so Jalen is an up-and-coming prospect. He's a guy that a lot of schools are in on. 6'7", 265, 270. Rapidly improving in his game. And he's rated as the number 72 offensive tackle in the nation. Again, I've already told y'all, I don't think the rankings this year are very good. That's not just an FSU thing, by the way. I just think they are behind due to the massive industry turnover that we had in the recruiting industry this year. He's going to take his final official visit to Florida State. He actually canceled his Mississippi State visit to take an unofficial visit to Florida State over the weekend, I believe. FSU went and visited him as well. Interesting tweet from Coach Dante Pimpleton, by the way. Did you see that?
No, I have not seen this tweet that you're referring to.
All right, I'm going to pull this up. Just did a home visit with my guys, Telly Lockett and Coach Greg Fry, FSU, and he killed it. We just got better, Knowles family. I definitely love the big guys. Hashtag go Knowles, hashtag Tribe18, hashtag do something. Now, is that a commit tweet? Maybe did they get him to commit on the down low? We'll see. Definitely think FSU is in a good position there. They have a strong tradition of kids from Lowndes High School, obviously. I mean, with Greg Reed and the guy who had a nice little score in the AFC title game yesterday, Telvin Smith.
Decent linebacker.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tyler Hunter, who unfortunately, I think the neck injury messed him up as far as becoming a superstar, but, you know, was still a decent player for a while, and a number of other kids as well. By the way, check this out. You want to talk about age difference in terms of the new coaches and the old coaches? This guy has his gamer tag in his Twitter bio. Have you seen this?
I have not, but that's hilarious.
All right, so Dante, it says, here's his bio. Running backs coach from Florida State. University from Louisville, Kentucky, home of the greatest, which is an Ali reference. He likes to use a lot of Muhammad Ali gifs.
Vague reference to the next kid we'll speak of, actually.
And the final thing is PS4, colon, coach underscore pimp with a 1 instead of an I. Man.
Yeah.
How many guys do you think owned a PS4 on the last step, much less put it in their Twitter bio? Now, look, that's not necessarily going to get you kids, but it doesn't hurt. A lot of these kids love video games. If you're on there, you throw the headset on, they throw the headset on, you can be talking to them while you're shooting them playing whatever you're playing, mm-hmm. you know? Anyway, that's kind of cool. It's relatable. Next kid we have on here is Cassius Pete, who is the, believe related to Andrews Pete, who is a really good player for Stanford and now is in the league. He's at a junior college in Arizona. We know that Florida State is looking at junior college defensive linemen. The pickings are kind of slim here this year, to be honest, and so they may or may not get one. But that's a kid that they're interested in and who Michigan State was in on for a while. So just a name to kind of keep in mind there. I don't know if he's going to visit yet. We'll monitor that. Just a name I wanted to throw out there for you guys.
Good deal. Dennis Briggs, in-state defensive lineman.
Look, Dennis is a kid who Miami feels really confident about. I think Florida State also feels fairly confident about. To me, he's kind of a five-tech type. He's a bigger frame kid. He's going to keep growing. Now, I will tell you, on the flight home from the opening this summer, Dennis was all in Noel gear. And look, that was a long time ago. And certainly things have changed with Florida State, and their coaching staff is different. But Odell Higgins is a very good recruiter, and you know Kissimmee is not like a real big place. And Briggs took his visit to Miami over the weekend and at least publicly didn't commit. So I think that means Florida State still has a chance to sign him. They're going to get him on an official visit down the stretch. I think they got a decent chance, man. I know a lot of the Miami people think that they're going to nail him down. Maybe they will, but Odell Higgins on a Central Florida kid that plays his position or could play his position, depending on if he's going to be an end or a tackle. I'm not going to bet against FSU there.
Kid out of Northwest Georgia here, defensive lineman Florida State got on a little bit recently, Jamarcus Chapman.
And a good example of a kid whose profile has blown up because he didn't sign early, right? This is a kid who I think Oregon was in on as well. LSU was in on at a time. It looks like now there's a lot of Miami and Florida State going on here. He's going to take a visit to Florida State. Him and Briggs are kind of similar. They're both kind of bigger, jumbo defensive ends. I know some people think Chapman could potentially grow into a defensive tackle, but we'll see on that. That's another kid they're in on, man, and they're going to get him on a visit, and they're going to have a chance to sign him.
Pacific Northwest wide receiver Treshawn Harrison.
Willie Taggart used his in-home visit last night. I know Harrison's looking at Utah and a couple other schools out west, but I think Florida State's going to get that last visit for him. So pretty encouraging there. That's a really elite athlete. Now, the one thing I'm not really sure of, I'm not sure how good the competition he plays out there, but if you watch his highlight tape, he just embarrasses people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would translate to most places, right? Like he might not make quite as many plays if he was playing in like Miami 6A or 7A, but I still think he'd make a good number of plays.
Javonta Jean-Baptiste, New Jersey linebacker.
That's just a name I threw on there because I know that they probably need to take another linebacker in his class. And now, as of right now, he's not scheduled to come on a visit. I was chatting with him. I know he's got the Ohio State offer recently. But that's a name that I think they could go in on if they want a linebacker in this class. I think they might need to take one. So just a name that if you guys are serious recruitnicks or if you're maybe a one-month-a-year recruitnik type that just gets into it during February or late January, we understand. That's a name to kind of file away there.
DeAndre Lidiker, a Tennessee defensive tackle.
Now, this is a name that FSU's actually kicking the tires on as well. I believe he was a Tennessee commit for a while. He may actually still be. I don't know if he's – he didn't sign, though. And that's
– important point of clarification, yeah.
Because if he signed, he didn't then you can't
– a whole lot of – yeah. You think we can get back involved with Justin Fields?
How many times have we been asked that question this year? No, actually. The guy I play poker with was trying to tell me – he's a big, big Gator fan. He was like, hey – I heard that Florida's getting back involved with Justin Fields.
On the low.
I was like, man, that's one of the best bluffs of the night.
I was going to say, not unless you're referring to maybe the Florida Marlins, but
yeah.
Or I guess the Miami Marlins, but yeah.
So Lytiker, yeah, he is still technically committed to Tennessee, but he is not signed. So that's a kid they could get involved with as well. He's a high three-star type right now. I mean, maybe he could be a four-star type. Inspirational story. I know on Twitter he shared that his, I believe his mom passed away some time back, and he plays for her memory, and looks like a pretty good player to me. So that's a name to watch as well. DeAndre Lytiker out of Tennessee.
Elijah Griffin, California, member of the secondary.
I just put this on because a lot of people ask me about this. I don't think Florida State's going to sign him. I think he's going to stay in California and go to USC. Look, it'd be great to sign him. He's a freak. There's no doubt. And to get Woodby and him out of Cali would be awesome. But I don't get the sense that they have that kind of traction here. Maybe I'm wrong. But I just – that's not the vibe I'm getting.
Devon Williams, another California prospect.
That's a kid I think that they might have a little more – not saying they're going to get him, but there's at least kind of a shot. They're certainly recruiting him. I know Woodby's on him. He's a real, real nice deep threat. If they can actually get him to come on a visit and stick with it, you're fighting the Cali schools and Oregon and whatnot. And it's hard to get kids to come that far east. But, you know, man, maybe there's a shot.
A name that the one consistent, the consistent name to appear in almost all 2018 recruiting at some point or another, going back to our old friend Josh Moore, the wide receiver out of Texas.
Yeah, so the one thing I'll say on this is that after talking to people in Texas, fewer of them feel like he's going to Texas A&M. Some of them think that he really wants to leave the state. Will it be Oregon? How much interest does Alabama still have in him? All that kind of stuff. If he really wants to leave the state, and we know he's long, at least had an affinity for Florida State, then maybe there's a chance to get him. I think that maybe there's a better chance than I thought a couple of weeks ago. He still has to make that official visit, which is coming up. This weekend, actually, along with a bunch of other top kids will be on FSU's campus, including, Jamarcus Chapman, Jalen Goss, Cam McDonald, who actually committed before he took his official visit, Josh Moore, maybe a couple other kids coming in as well this weekend. We'll have to figure those out. But it looks like it's going to be a good official visit weekend, and Josh Moore is a really good athlete. I would take him in this class if he wants to come. There's no doubt.
Certainly. And like I said, a name that has kind of ebbed and flowed with Florida State's recruiting interest, regardless of staff, regardless of what part of the year we previewed the 2018 class, just a name that's been around for a while. Bud, final kid on the board that we wanted to mention was Jalen Hall. Just give us your thoughts on him.
Sure. Jalen Hall is, I think, one of the better receivers in the country. He's out of Cali, a kid who is going to officially visit this coming weekend. I think Florida State's going to have a chance to sign him, not necessarily the favorite, although we'll see what he does, coming out of his visit. Interesting kid because he was probably the number one receiver in the country as a sophomore, and a good indication, and I'm not saying he's not still a good player. I think he is still a good player, but he's no longer, I think, in the conversation as the best receiver in the country, as other kids, kind of caught up to him and continue to get better and better. He's still a really good player. I like him a lot. People were saying, hey, FSU has a chance to sign the number one receiver in the country without, dogging a kid. The simple thing is no. That there are other kids who have passed him, but he still represents, I think, a really high floor player. He's a guy who could come in and could potentially play early because he understands how to use his body. He's just, he kind of is in some ways similar to what he was as a sophomore, as a junior, now that he's a senior.
Everybody progresses on different tracks, and that would be certainly a great addition for Florida State. I just think it's worthwhile that you're not necessarily signing the number one kid at the position as maybe he was previously ranked, or at least at some point in the process regarded as. So whether it's Jalen Hall, whether it's the most recent commitment, whether it's a lot of the kids on that list that we just went over, one of the common traits or a lot of commonality found throughout that list is that many of them are out-of-state kids. So let's just talk about this real quickly. give us your personal opinion as to whether this is a broader pattern, how this might develop over time, and whether or not this is just indicative of a new coach trying to make the most of his existing context.
Right. So I think that the last thing you said there is the most important. I don't think this is a long-term pattern where Florida State's going to sign, you know, a ton of out-of-state kids. In fact, if you look at the composition of the staff that Willie has put together so far, it is very much a dominate Florida, you know, understanding that Georgia's probably going to be more closed off than ever given what Georgia's doing on the recruiting trail, and you have got to get yours in your home state type staff. You know, Telly Lockett, Woody, Odell does a really good job in the state, obviously. Those type of guys, you know, Greg Fry being from Florida, Willie being from Florida. But you would be an idiot not to use the contacts that you've made over the last year on the recruiting trail. And if you're in Oregon, some of those contacts are going to be in the Pacific Northwest, like a Treshawn Harrison, or in California, like we see with a Jalen Hall and a Cam McDonald and a would-be and a you know, like a Devin Williams and even Elijah Griffin. There's no way that they're gonna be in on this many Cali kids on a yearly basis. Now, maybe there's some kids connected to some, you know, training program or something out there. Sure. Like, this is a one-year type thing. And I think that's probably smart because I do think that kids that go that far away from home probably have a higher incidence of being, you know, a bust, if you will. But for 1 year, when you're trying to salvage your recruiting class, because it pretty much all these schools with the new early signing day stuff are, you know, kind of struggling a little bit, which it's across the board, I think it's really smart to do it. And it's not as long-term a strategy as people think. It's kind of a one-year thing, and it's a smart one-year thing.
This staff's priority is going to be all about the state of Florida. There's no doubt in my mind. It's been expressed. It's what you can read into many of the hires that have been made, as you referenced. This is just a crazy year in general with how much transition. Obviously, we've personally gone through at Florida State. All these relationships, recruiting has become even an longer extended process. Many of those relationships were impacted by the coaching change. You just kind of have to work with the pieces that you can on the board that you're presented. And if a lot of those pieces happen to be in play because of where your former coach came from, then I think you just got to make the most of it. No, Florida State's not going to make some significant recruiting shift in strategy. Whenever we talk about the inherent positives, the inherent benefits of coaching at Florida State, it's one of the first things that comes up, if not the first thing that comes up, is recruiting and access to talent. Access to talent is recruiting the home state kids, which will be a focus for this staff in 2019, 2020, et cetera. So no shift in strategy. I think this is more about just trying to make the best of what you can here in the final couple of weeks. And interesting to see what this class ultimately looks like.
Absolutely, man. Finally, we've got a couple questions from people, from really astute folks here. They noticed that Dave Kelly, who is the director of player personnel / GM type for Florida State, or at least that will be his role, he was out recruiting with Willie Taggart, visiting Treshawn Harrison. And they said, how can he recruit off campus? And Dave Kelly, if you don't know, is a really good recruiter, going back to his days at UCF and even in high school. Well, they don't have a full 10-man staff yet, so you can elevate someone else to one of those positions temporarily if you choose, so that you make sure you have enough guys out on the road recruiting, and that is a smart move by Willie Taggart. Now, look, it's a move that all the coaches would make, you know, at pretty much any school if you had a guy that you wanted to get on the trail and you hadn't totally filled out your coaching staff yet. But that's really smart, especially because, you know, Dave already had a pre-existing relationship with Treshawn, because Treshawn used to be committed to Oregon, and Dave was his guy there at Oregon as well. So really smart, I think, by Willie, and good work there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Not too many things that I have to ask you about when it comes to recruiting, but that was one. I mean, it makes sense that you can do that as long as you don't have a full 10 name, that you could have 10 people out on the trail, but that was something that caught my eye. And again, I don't claim to be an expert, but I've followed recruiting long enough that there's not a whole lot of things that I don't understand or fully grasp. But that was one that I had to run your way.
Hey, we got a new commit to tell you about.
We do.
Absolutely. I went on an in-home visit myself and I was down there at the South Florida Express tryouts in Miami, and you know, had lunch with Chad Relinger and Shannon Young, and we got a new sponsor, man. Pretty cool here.
Yeah, so really excited to work with Chad, and I haven't had the opportunity to meet Shannon, but I know you met him recently at lunch. Two Florida State people that we're really excited to work with. So the new people that we're bringing on board is officially a Resolution Home Loans. Really excited to be able to add people that that can help guide you through the process. Kind of as I just referenced there, if there's a real detailed recruiting question that I don't immediately understand, I'm really fortunate to have an expert that's on the other end of the line that I can call, and Bud can clarify something for me, and really kind of look at Chad and Shannon in the same viewpoint. It's just a great resource for a topic that obviously a lot of people have some anxiety tied to, and they're just able to take you from point A to point B in the best manner possible, and probably save you a significant amount of money doing it. So excited to be able to work with them. We'll certainly have more information about this service, but Resolution Home Loans is a new sponsor, and there's somebody that we're really excited to be able to bring into the fold and have part of the NOLcast.
Absolutely, man. So I was sitting down at lunch, and we were talking, and they're both, you know, FSU alumni from the dynasty year. So we were joking that, you know, when I was there, FSU was not very good, and they had a lot of really, really good seasons during their college years. So what makes y'all different, right? Like why should we pitch y'all in the NOLcast? And Chad said, look, it's speed and service. Okay, you know, we know buying a home is a pain. It's less so with us. We're going to hold your hand every step of the way. We're going to over-communicate with you. We're going to try and reduce that anxiety. And then as far as speed, they give you a guarantee. They will close within 15 days or the contracted closing date, or they'll give you $500 off your closing costs. How? Well, they call it their almost home program, right? They eat the cost of underwriting the loan up front before you buy so that you know you're good. And once you find the home, all that's left is the appraisal, title work, homeowner's insurance. Then you get to hear those keys jingle, man. That's pretty sweet. A lot of places don't do that. You know, how do these people, you know, go into contract and all of a sudden the financing falls through? Well, maybe it wasn't underwritten beforehand. They do that because they don't want to mess around. They want to get you in that home fast, and they want to give you the certainty that you're gonna get that loan. Now, this is pretty cool too. Check this out. Shannon's their number one loan officer in the state. He's actually in Tallahassee. Chad's located down in Parkland, which is, you know, down in South Florida. They set up a special line to get you right to Chad and Shannon. You don't have to deal with anybody else. Just, you know, you're dealing with Knowles. You're working with Knowles and their number one guy here. 844-FSU-LOAN. Give them a call. 844-FSU-LOAN. Or if you prefer, FSUHomeLoans.com. FSUHomeLoans.com. That'll get you directly with Chad and Shannon.
Fantastic, Bud. Really, really excited to work with them. Why don't we go through a little bit of the coaching news of the day? Obviously, a pretty significant piece of the landscape was changed yesterday with the idea that Alabama's offensive coordinator is now going to go join the Bill staff. How does that have an impact on Florida State? Well, I'll let you explain that.
Well, okay, so Florida State was looking at, or potentially still is looking at, Mike Locksley as their offensive coordinator. And I know some people said that this was not going to impact Florida State, you know, whether Daboll was going to go to the Bills or the Giants or whatever, because he's obviously an NFL guy and hasn't coached a whole lot of college ball. And I think you and I both said, huh? Like, if you're Mike Locksley, why would you not wait a couple days to see if maybe you can get that Bama OC job? Because I guarantee I know which one's going to pay better. It's the one that, you know, carries the SEC network. So, indeed, Daboll is going to the Bills, and so that Alabama offensive coordinator job is now open. Florida State is obviously looking at Locksley as an OC slash probably QB coach here. Will Alabama give him that offer, or will Alabama go somewhere else? I don't know. It'd be interesting. Or maybe some sort of co-OC title. I know today Brian Daboll credited Mike Locksley with helping him acclimate his play calling a lot to the college game. Cole Kublik of SEC Network and ESPN actually reported that. He said, hey, I'd never run a lot of this read option stuff before. A lot of the spread stuff before, so interesting there, something we'll watch. I'll credit Josh Newberg here for throwing out a new name, by the way, Walt Bell. Mm-hmm. Now, I know a lot of y'all are probably not familiar with Walt Bell. This guy's got a really impressive resume. especially for a 35-year-old. Check this out. 2007 and 2008, he was a GA at Memphis under Tommy West, who was a really good head coach for a long time. And you know who the OC was at Memphis, Ingram?
During that period of time?
Yeah. This is really random. Yeah.
No. Who is it?
Clay Helton, the USC head coach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. So then he goes to Oklahoma State as a quality control guy for 1 year under Mike Gundy and Gunter Brewer. Pretty nice combo there of offensive minds. Then he goes to Southern Miss under Larry Fedora and Blake Anderson. He was a GA for a year, then a receivers coach for a year. Again, two really strong offensive minds to work under. They liked him so much, they took him with them to North Carolina. Again, Fedora was the head coach. Blake Anderson was the OC. There, Bell was the tight end coach and the recruiting coordinator. He lasted 2 years there. Then Blake Anderson gets the Arkansas State head coaching job. Who does he hire as his OC? Walt Bell. They go, they absolutely tear it up in their league. Arkansas State's a really good offense. I don't know if y'all have watched them much, but they are fun. They are fast. They are aggressive, man. And they don't mess around. Then he gets plucked away by DJ Durkin, who, you know, it looks like he's done a really good job there at Maryland. This year, they opened the year by just crushing Texas. You remember that? They put like a ridiculous amount of points on the Longhorns. Unfortunately, both their quarterbacks got hurt by game four. So they were on their third string quarterback for most of the rest of the year. Disappointing, certainly, but you know, made the most of it that he can. How in the heck is Willie Taggart hooked up with Walt Bell? Like, what is the connection, right? And this is usually the thing, because coaches don't hire guys that they're not connected to. I found it. First of all, I thought, okay, maybe Willie coached against him when he was at Western Kentucky and Bell was at Southern Miss, but they were actually in different conferences at that time, so that's not it. Willie was the running backs coach at Stanford for 2007 to 2009. You know who else was at Stanford during that time? Maryland head coach DJ Durkin, 2007 to 2009. Their times perfectly overlapped. Durkin is a guy who's been in the Harbaugh system. Obviously, a lot of these hires are coming from the Harbaugh tree. Durkin was also at Michigan under Harbaugh, I believe as his DC, in 2015. So there's a lot of connections there. Obviously, I don't think Durkin's going to tell Willie, hey, come get my OC. But obviously, if Willie's looking around for guys, he's probably looking at, okay, who do I know or who coaches for somebody I know? And if you were to call DJ, who he's worked with for, you know, 3 years and obviously is also a Harbaugh guy, I'm sure DJ would say, look, he's actually really good. And you know, Florida State's a major step up from Maryland. And he's a strong recruiter as well. So I tell you, if that ends up being the guy, I'm all about that. That's absolutely. And I'm not sure that wouldn't be an upgrade over Loxley, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, like, I don't think the drop-off is real big there.
Really impressive resume, a name to watch, certainly somebody that we'll continue to keep an eye on. Hat tip to Newberg for bringing that to the surface. Bud, we'll go from previewing a potential hire to one that Florida State has made. I don't want to get too lost in this today, but do want to just give an idea a little bit more about Harlan Burnett and some of his beliefs and ideas and what we might look for as far as what he implements.
Sure. So if y'all can do this, go back and find the like the national championship game on ESPN. They did like a mega cast. They had the regular broadcast. They had like the SEC film room. They had like the band cam, or they had a bunch of different stuff. But the one that I think that is relevant here, go find the one with the coaches in the room. And it's Mike Gundy, Matt Luke, who's the coach at Ole Miss, Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern coach, David Cutcliffe, Mike Bobo. A lot of times the coaches in the room who had not played against Alabama were saying, hey, they're in cover two, right? Because, you know, that's what it looked like. Actually, they were in cover four. And the guys in the room, like Bobo and Matt Luke, who had faced Alabama a couple times, would say, no, it looks like two, but they're really playing four. This is just how they do this. Michigan State also does that really well. Now, look, there's not a huge difference in how it looks. There is a difference in how it's played. They're both split safety coverages, right? You know, meaning middle of the field open,
right,
as opposed to middle of the field closed. They played a lot of four in that game. So if you go back and watch that broadcast, you can see how they were trying to disguise their four, make it look like two at times, ability to defend the run while still presenting a shell look so that you you know, you get the opponent to check to a run, and then you come down and make the stop. It's an interesting cat and mouse game. Look, there's no right way or wrong way to play defense. I mean, I guess there is some wrong ways, but for the most part at this level, you know, it's all about instilling confidence in your players so they can execute whatever sound scheme you have. But it is a pretty aggressive defense to play. And it's one that I just thought that how they disguise that, that's something you can go back and watch that broadcast and see, okay, Florida State will be doing some of this. They'll be doing some of that. So just watch the clips when Alabama's on defense. It's interesting. I'm sure, actually, that Georgia probably did some too, but I don't recall them talking about that much. And that's kind of tough to – like, that's kind of one of those topics that's hard to do on a podcast. So I'm just saying, if y'all are kind of one of those football nerds who could enjoy that sort of thing, go out and check that out.
One of the questions we were thrown, Bud, was now that Coach Taggart has just about completed his coaching hires, I'm curious if you have, if you two have any information about the new hires' past player development. It's been brought up here on the Nolcast in the past that our previous coaches seem to, quote-unquote, coach the studs, the 4 and 5 stars, but didn't develop the lower-ranked guys into good, decent college players. Do you or your do either of us see or feel there will be improvement in these areas? Now, this to me appears to be more a question about strength and conditioning when he talks about the development of the 4 and 5 star players.
Yeah, I don't think we ever said that they wouldn't, that they didn't coach him. I do think that there were complaints by coaches on that staff that the strength program was not doing a good enough job of raising the 4 instead of
too focused on the top end guys, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is an interesting area that could improve. And by the way, you notice that Jimbo didn't take Vic?
Yeah, hadn't been a whole lot of interest in Vic outside of Jimbo either. And I'm not, you know, the guy will get a job. He's a professional. He's accomplished. I'm not trying to sit here and slander him, but maybe not the commodity that he would have been 2 or 3 years ago. I'll put it that way.
I mean, I do think that Jimbo not taking Vic could be a reason for optimism as far as FSU's strength program this year, right? Because that could indicate, potentially, that Fisher didn't think he was doing a good enough job. Because if he thought he was doing a great job, you'd probably take him, right? You know, maybe Vic didn't want to work for him. But I think that there's a real chance you're going to see some impressive strength gains by some guys this summer. And actually, I believe workouts start today.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit of a change in mentality. That's something that we were going to, I think, try to talk about on a future pod. So there'll be some more strength and conditioning coach here, strength and conditioning talk here, but did want to address that question. Another question we had was, has Coach Taggart ever used formations with multiple running backs lining up at different positions, specifically with running backs playing H-back or slot receiver role? With all the talent returning at running back and the depth issues at wide receiver, I was curious as to if this would be a potential way to leverage the existing talent and spread some touches around to more of the playmakers.
So I'm looking up here his stat. First of all, the multiple running backs formations, yes, absolutely. And I think
absolutely,
that's something
yes.
We will see continue. As far as other guys like catching the ball out of the backfield, this year at Oregon they had a guy with 15 and a guy with 14, so that's not a ton. Marlon Mack had 28 for them in 2016 at USF. 25 was the leader, I believe, in 2015, 13 and 21 in 2014. So as far as I can tell, he's not had a back catch a bunch of balls. Now, part of that is because they're primarily a running offense. But I don't know. Maybe he has not had guys with amazing hands. Maybe Marlon Mack is not the best pass catcher. Royce Freeman is certainly more of a pounder type. I could see a scenario in which you're throwing the ball more to – you know, Laybourne or Jacquez Patrick. By the way, that's a thing we'll talk about as well in a second. But first, man, we have to talk about Reuben Day.
Yeah, we get to talk about Reuben Day. We'll be releasing this on the 15th, which means you have a day and a half to make your plans for the 17th of the month. Reuben Day is something that we started to experience. One of our first interactions with the For the Table restaurant group, something that they have been doing exceptionally well since day one. And just want to remind people, when the 17th comes around, that's Reuben Day. That's what you need to have in the month. Maybe you got another day in the month that you associate with a power bill or car payment, something like that. 17th is Reuben Day. Just one of the best sandwiches you're going to find anywhere. and is a little bit emblematic of the whole operation around there. Consistent, wonderful level of quality. If they don't think they can do it at a high level, they don't try. There's a specific window of time as to when they do this, and it's just another reminder as to why we're as fortunate as we are to be able to pair and continue to work with the great people at For the Table Restaurant Group.
Absolutely, man. Mattis Social just awesome right there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium in Collegetown. Longtime sponsor of ours, longtime supporter of the show. Knowles Support Knowles, and y'all make sure to go down there and grab a Reuben, especially if you are in Tallahassee.
Madison Social and For the Table Restaurant Group isn't going anywhere, but a lot of Florida State people were caught off guard by the idea of Jalen Wilkerson leaving. That was not not necessarily an early departure that a lot of people had had on the board.
No, it wasn't. And look, I don't begrudge these kids going pro early, man. I think a lot of times it's actually the smart move when a lot of people think they should stay. Wilkerson is not a player who had first-round talent that would have been brought out, you know, if he had played another year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes guys have kids, multiple kids. Sometimes guys have grades or they realize, hey, I'm not going to be able to pass any more classes realistically. I struggled a lot this semester. Classes only get harder. I'm not saying that's
him. A much bigger deal than the general fan base understands. Absolutely. The further you get in, the harder it is necessarily to find classes that are conducive with what you think you realistically want to go through or what you think you can do.
Or that you can pass. I mean, you know, it's tough. Yeah. Look, practice squad guys make $122,000 for working 17 weeks, plus some mini camp and training camp stuff. That's really good money as a 21-year-old. Really good, man.
Anybody. Friends of mine that work in investment banks out of college don't necessarily make $122,000. In fact, most of them at least didn't when they were straight out of college.
Right. So that's awesome. I mean, if you can do that and you can, I don't know, go work at Home Depot or something, you know, making a prorated 40 for the other part of the year, you're almost at 150 grand as a 21-year-old. Now, if you spend it like you're on the real squad and not like the practice squad.
It goes fast. It could go pretty quick.
Yeah, then you're going to be broke. But look, you can always go back to school. People are like, you know, why would you give up your education? Like, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
These schools want these kids to come back. They need them to come back. It helps their graduation rates. Jalen can go online and finish his degree. You know, Devontae Freeman, Jamison, those guys are all doing that or did that. If you're not going to take like a huge leap and turn your draft status, and I think he could have made somewhat of a leap because he would have played a lot this year. It does hurt FSU's depth quite a bit. You know, maybe you can go pro. One kid who did not go pro, though, is Jacquez Patrick.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I don't know, there just seemed to be an assumption that that Patrick was going to go pro. I think it's an interesting decision. I think I'm the biggest fan of Jacquez Patrick. There is really love the running back that he's turned himself into, by all accounts. I'm not in that locker room every day. I don't know that, but he's a great influence on the locker room as well. And the idea that your head coach gets to implement a new offensive system with two backs, the level of Patrick and obviously the, you know, we don't need to talk about the freshman from Mississippi. Everybody saw what that kid's capable of doing. There's a lot of excitement and significant pieces to which to build your original offense around.
Yeah, and look, is Patrick going to play a whole lot in the new offense? I guess we'll see. Okay, he's a good back. He's not a great back. Is he going to get that much better physically? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I thought he was in better shape this year than he was in 2016. But I will say this. Patrick at least has good practice habits and seems to be like a veteran pro. And that will raise the floor of the running back group. Okay? It's not like you need the space. You didn't need Jacquez Patrick to go pro. He can still help this football team both with the ball in his hands and by making the younger backs have to work a lot in practice to beat him out. You know, if you're Laybourne, that number two spot isn't just yours. If you're Zaquandre White or Amir Rasul, that number two spot is not just automatically yours now. It's another guy you got to beat out. It's another guy you're going to have to be, you know, that much sharper in terms of making sure you watch your film on the iPad, making sure you don't miss workouts, make sure you're going to class, all that kind of stuff. I think it's a good thing he's back.
I think it's a good thing that he's back. I think coaches will be fairly creative. And look, I'm not saying you force Jaquez Patrick on the field, but I think you can be creative with how you use him. I'm not saying he's going to line up as an H-back or something, but I think kind of to reference the question from a couple minutes ago, I think you can see Jaquez Patrick maybe being used a couple different ways, maybe in an unorthodox manner in this offense. And I think it's a good get for the pieces, the X's and O's, but I think it's a good piece overall for the program in general, and a strong personality and a good piece of leadership for the first year of Taggart's regime here in Tallahassee.
Absolutely. And then just quickly here to finish out the show, Clemson defenders are staying. This is ridiculous, and is, quite frankly, I was considering picking FSU for the division next year, but given the fact they have to play both Virginia Tech and Miami, and the fact that Clemson does not, and they get these guys come back, Cleveland Farrell and Austin Bryant are both coming back, and so is Mitch Hyatt and the linebacker Joseph. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they would do that. Now, granted, maybe Bryant, the first-round grade on him was maybe not accurate as far as media reports, but Farrell had a really good year. Look, I can homer it up and say I'm going to pick FSU to win the division, but I can't lie to the readers or the listeners, and I feel like that's something that people appreciate with this show, and I'm not going to do it, not with what they have going on there. That's ridiculous.
It is. So good for them. Able to convince one or two kids to keep it in the upstate of South Carolina one more year before going pro.
That's where I want to be.
That's where I want to be too. Absolutely, definitely.
So two more notable things here. Virginia Tech, the Edmonds brothers went pro early, which is big. That's the safety brother is not that good. The linebacker brother, who I think is Tremaine, he is a freak. Like, he's probably the best, or probably was the best linebacker in the ACC this year. And he's like 6'5", 240, and was not playing like end. I mean, he was legitimately playing linebacker at that size. And that's scary, and I'm glad he's gone. And in Miami, Ingram, did you see that they actually did lose both their starting DTs? As we said on the Nolcast, that their Miami people were worried that they might.
I did see that. A theme we've been talking about for a couple weeks. Absolutely.
It's a nice little dose of optimism. look, in saying that I can't pick Florida State to win the division, it doesn't mean I don't think they can win the division. I just, if I had to make a pick, I can't ignore Clemson getting those guys back. That's just nuts. So,
absolutely.
Don't want to end the show on a negative note.
No, understood. A little dose of reality, something we'll continue to look at and as we move into the offseason further. So, Bud, hopefully people found this as a nice little update as to what's going on in recruiting. Want to thank the feedback that we get on social media. It's nice to see when we don't record for 3 or 4 days that people start hitting us up looking for a podcast to appear in their inbox somewhere. Thank you for the continued support of our sponsors. Really, really excited to be able to work with the good people at Resolution Home Loans and what we can talk about and bring to you over the coming months with them. So, as always, just want to thank our listeners for the support they've given us, what it means to the podcast, what it means we're able to do in the future, and look forward to the next Nolcast.
All right, guys. Take care. We'll be right back.